Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Okay, well, one of our speakers had to leave, but there were some very interesting ideas there and from our speakers. So I'd like to open it up now for us to discuss some of those points or put some questions to any of the speakers. Anybody got any questions to kick us off? Yes, here we go. Thank you. Oh, I was going to come up with one of mine again.
There was a mention regarding the adoption scorecards and the fact that there's perhaps an aspiration to augment them further so that they're more holistic in capturing true performance. Is that dialogue ongoing or is it set in tablets of stone? Are we going to see further developments with them?
My understanding is that it's both of those things. It's partly ongoing. How can we use the scorecards and make them even more sophisticated? I think there is a risk of including too many indicators in there. You lose the focus and intensity of it. All I was asking was that the adoption scorecard is located within a wider context of the performance of social care services, including its work in terms of the overall care population and its preventative work as well.
Ellen, I just want to find out, with regards to the concurrent planning, what's the oldest age that you've gone up to and how do you manage that contact between the child and with already placed with adopters and with a birth family?
Okay, I'm going to cheat here. Terry Fitzpatrick, who is the expert service manager from South Tyneside for adoption, is actually in the audience and I think he would be able to give you far more detail than I could. So I'm going to cheat and ask Terry to respond.
Thank you very much, Helen. The eldest child, in answer to the first part of the question, the eldest child was a 2.5-year-old. But it predominantly is very young children or pre-birth we start to plan this. So, you know, we hold our hands up. It is very, very young children. And in terms of the contact arrangements, we do expect that adoptive stroke foster carers, as they are, will maintain contact diaries in the way that we would expect foster carers to do so. But all of the contact plans have been facilitated through. We have a specialist contact service, so they actually facilitate the contact arrangements. Foster carers, stroke adopters have actually driven children to contact centres and so on, so they do play their part. But there have been protected placements and haven't gone on to meet the birth family. So it's a different model, in a sense, to the true form of concurrent planning, certainly that evolved from America, where foster carers are proactive in supporting birth parents with rehabilitation plans. We accept that. We see it more as an early permanence planning, really.
Any other questions? Shall I ask one of mine? Oh, no, I've got one over there. Sally again. What was that?
It's for Morag and Joanne. Just to say how really impressive your recruitment campaign is and what you've achieved from it. I wanted to ask, number one, whether you could say what it actually cost. And secondly, we are particularly struggling with difficulties in terms of converting people. I mean, we do quite well at getting high numbers of inquirers, but it's much more challenging to convert them than it used to be into approved adopters. And I wondered if you knew, given, you know, you'd had that overwhelming response, what that had actually, you know, what your conversion rate was. I'd just be interested if you did.
That's a good question. Firstly, to answer your first question regarding budget, there is a recruitment budget assigned, but that includes our information evenings, which we hold in hotels. We had 2 for adoption a month and 2 for fostering a month for the best part of 6 months. So we've gone outside because we think it looks more professional than coming into our lovely social work building. So there's money set aside for that, plus training, plus other things, but I can tell you openly that our recruitment budget overall is around about 70,000, which is a lot of money, but that includes production of leaflets, information packs, the web, advertising, everything that's based around that, plus information evenings, training, a whole host of things. It does seem like a lot of money, but from that, we couldn't buy what we got basically from that if it wasn't for celebrity endorsements And the television campaign was actually done really cheaply as well. It was because we get Kay Adams involved as well, and she's actually willing to do more with us because she's interested. And you really can't buy that. Coming back to conversion rates, our dropouts are probably naturally across the UK. It's, what, 10%, isn't it? And we did have a high amount of inquiries. What we can say, we had 54 adoption approvals, and we've currently got another 35 under assessment, which is a lot. And we have got new assessors in, and they are going to be approving families within 3 months. That's what we've been told. But for conversion rates, it's not difficult. I don't have those stats in front of me, but I'd be more than willing to send them to you if you'd be interested in that. Have you got anything else? No.
No, I suppose just really to echo that, although there is a recruitment budget, financially the cost of the campaign were very, very minimal. And it was because we were given this support and the encouragement to try different things, which actually weren't too expensive. And Morag went through some of the figures of that in terms of modern technology and embracing some of that as a communication tool. So,
any other questions? At the front here. Thanks. Did you say who you are as well?
Tina Coburn, team manager from the London Borough of Tower Hamlets. This is a question for Helen and also for the Glasgow team. I congratulate you on working so hard to achieve assessments within such a short time frame, 4 months for Helen, and then you're looking at 3 months. But I am curious to know what it is that you miss out when you're doing your assessments. Given our earlier speaker who said that most prospective adopters and approved adopters actually felt the timescale, the current timescale, worked well and that they saw the benefit and the value of that. So I'm just curious to know how you're achieving such a short timescale.
I mean, my response to that would be I'm not aware that we're skimping in any way in terms of the quality. What we have is a relatively small, very tight, very experienced adoption team. And I think it really speaks volumes in terms of the level of expertise, and that's matched with some pretty effective social care practice in the teams. So unless Terry wants to say something more from the floor, I'm not aware that we're losing any quality in the process in terms of, you know, being more timely in that process. Terry?
Echo that. I mean, yeah. There's nothing that we actually miss out in the formal assessment process. Where we've achieved it in two and a half months, we've used sessional workers who've been able to give a focused approach to an assessment, so maybe have located themselves in an area for several weekends in a row, etc. So it's been able to maximise the time and the opportunity. And it is an average, and some families have needed to take longer than that. Mm. In the last year of the families that we approved, 7 months happened to be the lengthiest assessment. But we have in the past had assessments that have gone on beyond that and gone up to the 8-month mark and so on, sometimes beyond, and for good reason, and at the request often of adopters. So we're flexible with that. When we're able to give that focused approach to it, we always set out a programme of what the assessment will entail so that people are aware right from the start what will be covered, what the agenda will be, what's expected of them, so that for each session they're prepared. And, okay, the human element comes into it. There'll be times when people are ill or take holidays, etc. You work around that. But we find that if we can set off with dedicated time to this, then it is achievable within 4 months without skimping on anything, really.
Just put that to you as well.
I suppose I haven't really got much to add. Our approach to the assessment is the same as obviously South Tyneside, where we don't skimp on anything. The assessors also have ring-fenced dedicated time and have the caseload weighted accordingly, where they come in and that's their sole task. The wider adoption team, and obviously the 17 social workers in Glasgow City Council who are attached to the adoption team, their assessments will take slightly longer than that, but we would hope to achieve that within 6 months. And again, it is about how we communicate what we expect of prospective adopters in terms of what the assessment entails, and obviously what their commitment is as well as our commitment to that process. But we don't skimp on anything at all.
Given some of the problems that you talked about why children end up coming into care, mm-hmm. Do you provide any special provisions given the issues that the children are coming with for the adoptive parents. So rather than telling the adoptive parents, here's this lovely child, off you go and care for it, you know, do you inform them there might be problems in the future because of their parents' drug misuse or things that happened to them when they before they came to you?
I mean, that's explicit from the outset of the preparation groups and the information evenings in terms of the uncertainty around some of the children's profiles and how that may transpire into teenagers and adulthood and in terms of the lifelong care aspect. We do have a commitment in Glasgow and we have good working relationships with health services and education services. So if it's a Glasgow child who's been adopted in terms of post-adoption support, they're all fully signed up to that, and where they will try and signpost and link adopters into services if there's a need for that additional support for that child. We will also link them into our LAC health team in terms of pre-placement for them to go and have that full discussion with medical professionals about what that may mean if they were to take and agree to a match progressing with regard to a child who's got fetal alcohol syndrome. What does that mean? We would share as much information as we have, both before, during, and obviously in terms of ongoing support afterwards.
Because my worry is just that 10 years down the line, if the problems start coming up, that, you know, the confidence we heard from Adoption UK, that people don't feel confident to come back because they see themselves as a failure. But it's just whether you actually flag that up beforehand, but you're saying
you do.
You do.
Glasgow explicitly wrote into the adoption service plan that we will support families for a minimum of 3 years. If we place a child and if the children are in Glasgow, we will support you for as long as it's needed. And there's a commitment where we will work with universal services to make sure families are linked into support services.
Okay. Well, we're now for a quick refreshment break. I think it's 10 minutes. And then we'll come back to listen to Satwinder, who's going to talk to us about the work of PACT, which is very important, siblings and kids with disabilities. So have a nice coffee and we'll see you in 10 minutes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.